Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe, which is shrinking as we speak. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter, and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky and Arkansas, as a public service presentation. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us print space from time to time. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold Family Intervention Specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation. Harold?
Good evening, everybody. Hi, Joseph. Thank you for that nice introduction. And it is an honor to be here. The 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the people that gather in the rooms to improve their conscious contact with God and have done that since 1935. All of that is vitally important. And really, to be honest, I owe my life to the program and the rooms and people that really step up and serve as sponsors. They are people who are willing to serve God, and in that willingness, they serve their neighbors. It's like the Good Samaritan coming along, and there was a man injured on the side of the road and left for dead, and there were numerous people that passed by and wouldn't lift a finger, even priests and men of the cloth, but this Samaritan, they were the hated community, because they were called half breeds and so forth. It was way beyond the hatred that we know today. And even so, he stopped, bandaged the wounds, picked the guy up, brought him to basically what was a hospital in those times, paid for his stay, and said to the innkeeper, if there are more costs, let me know, I'll pay those also. And that's the sort of spirit we're talking about here in the world of recovery. What was in it for the Samaritan? Just the fact that he can sleep, he can go to bed, close his eyes, knowing that he has served God by serving another human being. Jesus went so far as to say, if you give somebody a cup of water, you're serving me. And so that's the idea. We're here to serve God. And the way I do that, one of the ways, is by attending recovery meetings and calling people in between meetings, and working with people, finding people who are willing to work the steps and working the steps with them. Just as happened with me when I was early in the young in the program, someone took me under their wing, worked the steps with me, several people. I've had sponsors become ill and die. One of my favorite sponsors was a man with Parkinson's, Tim. And he passed away, and time after time, there have been people who have reached out to help me. And my job to improve my recovery, I reach out to help others that are new in the program, and we work the steps, and we talk about the principles. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are three of the principles that we talk about. And all of this comes together not only to keep me sober, to keep me away from drinking and drugging, but to help me really get at the taproot of the whole problem, and that is selfishness and self-centeredness. That's what the steps really do. That's been my experience, and I think the experience of millions of others. So here we are. We are facing, this is a warfare. We're facing a formidable foe, and while we're in recovery, the enemy is out there in the parking lot doing push-ups, getting stronger. If we do happen to succumb to temptation and get back into the addiction, the active addiction, the drinking, or the other selfish things, the escapes from reality. A lot of people switch from alcohol to porn addiction, and that does, they're discovering with the new brain scans, that does brain damage, a lot like cocaine addiction. So if I do go off, if I do relapse, if I do go out, they call it going out. If I go out and I escape from reality and get back into my selfishness many times, and I've been to way too many funerals, it's fatal. This is a life or death struggle, and I don't want to I don't want to be overly dramatic, but I do want to make it very clear. This is life and death. Many people die. The estimates are, by the National Traffic Safety Council, 22,000 drunk driving deaths every year, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. So it's an honor to be here. Our focus is what is it like working with other people? What is it like going to meetings? And so I can hardly wait to get into some of the material. Oh, and let me mention, Joseph does not make money from this website. This is a public service. This is his way of giving back. This is my way of giving back. Not only doesn't he make money, this costs him thousands. He's invested from his own pocket a lot of money in making this go, and it's really great that we have a radio broadcast. It's great that he keeps the website, he keeps improving the website, and it's quite nice. It's easy to navigate. There's a lot of these radio broadcasts that are recorded and archived, thanks to Joseph's effort. So I want to just again give him some appreciation and gratitude for everything he's put in, and I'm glad to add a little bit so that we can just make it easy for people to see the value in going to meetings, working the steps, working with a sponsor, and eventually all of that gets you ready to be a sponsor, and that's where it really starts to take off. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Thank you for all those kind words. It's very humbling. But that's enough about me. Would someone else like to talk about me?
Give them the call-in number.
Oh, yeah, okay. Hold on for a second before I do that. I'm on another page. To follow up what you had said was, when we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And we're in that service, and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service, and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA or any addiction program is action. Action and more action, for faith without works is dead. You want to give the number, Harold? Give the number.
Well, yes. If you would like to call in, it's easy to do. And on Sunday nights, we are live. We're live right now. 949-534-0621. 949-534-0621. After you get the Blog Talk Radio, press 1 and you can join us in our conversation. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Some people ask why I do this. One of the main reasons I do this is several. I don't believe people do anything usually for one reason. There's usually a multitude of reasons we do things for, a preponderance of direction. And one of the reasons is I've had two daughters die from this disease. The grief that would be too much to bear is slaked by the thirst to be of service. My wounds are soothed by the effort of action in helping the next sufferer. I find meaning and peace grounded in the satisfaction of a job of worth well done. When I have a new sponsee, one of the first directions I give them, and I like to start the show with this, is what we call in the program the third step prayer. Now, this isn't AA per se. This is Rum Radio. Now, AA and the 12-step program is the template of our understanding. It's the original. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps found therein is the original understanding, and I believe a gift from God. Of course, I asked my church and other people too, if the 12 steps are not a gift from God, why have you adopted them? And if they are a gift from God, why do you feel compelled to change them? A lot of folks do, to their understanding, they change words and thoughts. But I've, in my experience on this third rock from the sun, is anytime you take an original and you make a duplicate, it's not quite as clear or clean as the original. So I use the original information as best I can and try to not reinvent the wheel. It's not necessary. This is a God-directed program. It's been from the beginning, and it works. That so the third step prayer is found on page 63 of the Big Book. And the reason I give this is one of my first assignments to a new sponsee is one, it gets them in the habit of picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. They're going to call one of the men on the newcomer's packet or a men's list, which will turn into their lifeline, a list of men's names, men for men, women for women, when possible, that they could call in periods of doubt, anxiety, fear, hunger, lonely, or tired. And they during these pieces of stretch, if they can't get a hold of me, their sponsor, they need to know that there's other fellows out there that can work just as well as me. I don't have any special magical powers that no one else, that anybody else doesn't have. We're all just about the same in there. Some are more healthier than others, there's no doubt about it. But we all have the same affliction, and we're like survivors from a shipwreck. So we have a common knowledge and a common bond. I like to think we're less than kin and more than kind. So the other reason I have them call is that the third step prayer is going to give them the ability to connect up with a home group. I think it's real important, especially new in the program, to have a home group. These are people that get to know you and you get to know them, and there's a feeling of camaraderie. It's like joining a new tribe, sort of like a extended family. People interested in your specific welfare as you become interested in their specific welfare. Third, the third step prayer, I also consider this the surrender prayer. So it gives us an idea what we're going to accomplish by working all 12 steps. Unless step 3, which is where this prayer is found, is given a regular and persistent effort, all the rest of the 12 steps will come to little or no avail. And fourthly, the person he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink of alcohol. And when you call, there's no guarantee, but the chances are he will not. So the newcomer is already into service. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may do thy will always. Well, do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that, Harold?
Amen. Amen.
See, I tried to slip in an extra word. See, I have to be careful with that. I always have an extra word I try to slip in here and there. Tonight's show, we're going to do excerpts from the captain's table. From steerage to captain's table. This is the captain's table. These are insights and thoughts or things that I've discovered in 15 years or 16 years in the program, taken from the big book in the 12 and 12, another program literature. And this segment is called Now I Lie Me Down to Sleep. It's a picture of Pinocchio with a long nose and Jiminy Cricket. His surrogate conscience sitting on the tip of his nose. Remember, Pinocchio's deal was that he couldn't tell the truth. A lot of people forget that. They remember the giant whale and Geppetto, which is... Geppetto is an interesting name. It means old Joe. Did you know that, Harold?
It means old what?
Old Joe.
Ah.
Yeah, see... Pepe in Italian is Joe, Peppino is Little Joe, Giuseppe is Joseph, and Geppetto is Old Joe. A lot of Joes there. Old Joe. The liar's punishment is not in the least that he is not believed, but that he cannot believe anyone else. George Bernard Shaw. How do you know when an alcoholic in his cups is lying? Their lips are moving. We would lie so often that we would lie even when the truth would have served us better. It's an interesting phenomenon, and one thing I would caution new sponsors, when a newcomer comes in, he's been used to lying, chances are, for a very long time. He who loves to make a lie. It's part of the being bankrupt spiritually. Don't expect your new sponsee to immediately come into this whole deal all of a sudden brandishing the truth like a new sword. Time takes time. In a meeting of AA, this was Hilltoppers in Austin, Texas. Was an old home group of mine, the least likely of men had shared that he had a problem with lying. He was an author of several dozen Christian books. He said that he would lie about little things, things to bolster your view of him. He said that the way he cured himself from the practice was to tell you immediately that he had just lied to you. Eureka, since I suffered from the same malady, I was going to try this antidote. In short order, a lady queried me about receiving an email from her. I had, but having no romantic interest, I said no, perhaps an electronic glitch, a gremlin in the machine, a power outage, etc. You ever notice lies always need a little extra legs to hold it up? You know, I always consider lies to be like a three-legged bench. The truth often stands alone. It will stand on its own. Doesn't need any props. The truth don't need any props. I just told my granddaughter recently about there was a when I bring her home at night, after like I had a Saturday, a couple hours with her. Her father does a debriefing. He queries her, inquires of her of every words that the words that have been said back and forth, where we went, what she ate, etc. Very, you know, has this issues about control. So I always try to encourage her. It's always important to tell the truth, and I tell her the truth is usually bitter to the taste, and then turns sweet in your mouth. And a lie is sweet to the taste, and then turns bitter. I like to think of it when Pontius Pilate asked Jesus who he was. And Jesus said, I'm the truth, the way, and the life. And then Pilate asked him, what is truth? The curiosity is that he had answered the question before it was asked. With all the courage I could muster, I uttered sheepishly, I just lied to you. I had received your email. The woman looked miffed at my statement, and I felt empowered once the deed was done. I now had a tool that could disown me as a bastard child from the father of all lies. I had lied, you know, I've noticed this. When I was growing up as a child, my mother turned around to me one day and says, no matter what, if you lie, don't admit to it. Because then there would always be doubt as to the truth of it. Harold?
Yes, that relates to your first statement. I took off the shelf again for numerous times the book The Road Less Traveled by Dr. Scott Peck, a wonderful author, and he addresses this issue in an eloquent way, and it boils down to the fact that if we tell one lie, we've got to tell another lie to cover that first lie, and then two more lies to cover the first two lies, and it just becomes a tangled web, whereas it's much, much easier just to simply tell the truth, and that way we don't have to remember who we said it to, what we said, when we said it to, and who we said it to, and it we can see. My problem was my memory really wasn't that good. I used to hang out with people who were extremely good at lying, and they became what modern psychology has learned to call habitual liars. And those are people who lie and lie and lie. They're in a habit of lying. It's such a reflex that they will lie when it would be much better for them if they just told the truth. But it's just habitual lying. And they had excellent minds. They were extremely intelligent people and were really good at it. And they've invested decades in practicing and honing their skills, and I just couldn't seem to pull it off. So I've been really studying the Bible, the truth of God, and finding that is one of the key elements, is to really love the truth, be dedicated to the truth, tell the truth. Anytime there's a temptation, just to be honest, admit it. A lot of the meetings that you and I attend, Joseph, the 12-step meetings, the honesty level can really become quite high, and that makes the meeting very valuable. I'm really grateful for meetings where there's a huge amount of honesty. It's quite a blessing. Joseph?
What a tangled web we weave when we first practice to deceive. There's also a term called congenital liar. You ever hear that, Harold?
No. Tell me more about that.
Congenital liar is a term that indicates that you are, genetically predisposed to lie. There are a few such unfortunates. They seem to have been born that way. Sound familiar? It's in the preamble.
Yeah.
Yeah, congenital, that they're genetically predisposed to lie. Now, I don't know if that's the case or not, but there's a preponderance of suggestion that that could be the case. The sins of the father passed down to the third and fourth generations. That's a biblical term. I believe that through the DNA, there's a genetic propensity sometimes of picking up the same behaviors that we were born with. Some people would disagree. But I think do we not come from our progenitors? I mean, who are we? Isn't that all that DNA that's come up from the crack still in us somewhere? So if my great-grandfather was a horse thief, you know what? I might always be considered how to figure out how to get that free ride. A congenital liar says it's naturally predisposed to lie. You know, even they can get well if they have the capacity to be honest. It's hard for some folks, especially the congenital, if there is such a critter, and there's a possibility, our text alludes to that. But it's also a behavior. It would be difficult for them to actually start telling the truth because a lie comes so much easier. It's really sweeter to the taste initially. It just rolls right off, and it's been done long a time. There's a guy that I know at the radio stations like that. He's a salesman, and he'll lie continuously. And he gets the biggest kick out of it if you believe him. And Barnum said, I believe, that the bigger the lie, the more fantastic, the greater the chance people would believe you. So we have to learn, or I had to learn, that sometimes I have to take it on a chin a couple times. And that still happens. Every so often, a lie will pop out. I got to be honest with you. And, you know, and I believe in the repentance process. So that's what the 12 steps are. It's the repentance process for children. And when I lie, I'm miserable until I can get it off my chest. I can't live with myself until I admit to it to somebody. And, of course, after the fact, it takes a lot more energy and a lot more humility, because now I've opened myself up to humiliation. And I had to do it, I'd say, probably within the last 2 weeks. Something came up, and I was fearful that if they found the truth out about me, that I would be shunned in a group. So after there was a time, the fellow I told that to, I took him outside and I said, look, I got to be honest. You know, I told you a lie and this was the truth. And he appreciated me saying that. But let me tell you, Harold, those are hard things to do. And it's so much easier to let the truth roll off your tongue than go back and try to catch that wild horse once it's left your mouth. Harold?
Yes, I hear you. There was a wonderful sponsor years ago named Jack, and that was his practice. If he told a lie, he would stop himself in mid-sentence and say, as you explained in your little story, I just lied to you. I had received your email. And stopping yourself, that is difficult, stopping yourself mid-sentence and right in the moment admitting that you lied and then saying what the truth is. But it's a very healthy practice to begin if you have the courage and the kahunas. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Actually, I think that's difficult. It's even harder the longer it goes. I think we don't do that, once we have that lie imprinted, we take ownership of that lie. Now we get into rationalization, minimization, and justification to prop up the lie in our own minds. Well, it didn't really matter. It's not going to hurt anybody. It's just a white lie. Well, there's no gray lies, is there? I don't think there's a gray lie. There's white lies and black lies. Any gray lies? What would a gray lie look? All cats are gray in the dark. So it's not hurting anybody, and it's okay. So now I don't have to deal with it, and the longer I wait, the less the chance I'm going to be able to gather the humility or the humiliation it's going to take to show my face. We're all lied to every day. I'm quite convinced. We just never know when. But that means, like when we started with George Bernard Shaw said, it's not so much that the liar isn't believed. The liar doesn't believe anybody. That's his curse.
Well, yes, and I think so many people that have become habitual liars have told so many lies for so long, and some of the lies are told repeatedly to the extent that they begin believing their own falsehoods, and that's when the big trouble begins. I do think they lose track of what's a lie and what's the truth, and they believe their own fabrications, and they're in deep trouble then. Joseph?
My dad told me the same thing I believe you heard, was that unless you have a really good memory, you might as well tell the truth, because it'll catch you in the end, which I was surprised coming from my dad, since my dad and my mom were very codependent. They suffered from the illness of codependencies, two love addicts. Their relationship was so enmeshed that it was to the exclusion of their own children.
Wow.
I had another chance with my brother on a telephone conversation, and I stopped and told him I was lying to him. My brother didn't miss a beat, as he knew I always lied to him. I lied to him. I thought he would have said something. Not at all, because I always lied to him, and he always knew it. We lie to every day, we just don't know when. I wish I could tell you that the tool has rusted from lack of use, but it's not the case. There are times, even still, that I have to pick up that tool and have to admit, for convenience sake, my tongue has slipped sideways. It gets caught in my throat, to which I now quickly regurgitate. But it bothers me now. When I say a lie and I know it, I'm very uncomfortable. And that wasn't like me at all. You know, that would be, if I got a, I wouldn't even think twice about it.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I've been listening to a sermon series about spiritual growth and what sorts of things we can mark as guideposts along the way, indicating that we are growing spiritually. And one of the main characteristics of a person that is growing is the fact that their conscience becomes more and more sensitive, and when they do things that are not right, it bothers them more and more and more. So a person in a long phase of spiritual growth, their life will become more and more pure, but at the same time, their conscience will bother them more and more, because any time they stray from the straight and narrow path, their conscience really bothers them. And so I think it's a natural sign of spiritual growth that you just, it bothers you so much when you do lie. And of course, no one's perfect, and our ability to be honest and ask forgiveness and repent and admit to God and others and ask for forgiveness is very, very important to our spiritual growth, our conscious contact with God. And as I put it, every day I want to be able to better serve God. I want to be more useful to God every day than I was the day before. Joseph?
Straight is the gate and narrow is the way. I like to think the road might narrow, but the view does broaden. The next segment we're going to do is the bedevilments versus the promises. This was a very interesting post. There's not a lot to it, but it's very interesting. In the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, on page 52, we have a sequence called the bedevilments. Interesting term. Fairly archaic. I think other than the Big Book, I don't think I've ever heard that before. And then on page 83, this is step 9. Before we're halfway through, we will know a new freedom and a new happiness. And this is going to be the promises that come from doing the work and going to our fellows and making the amends personally. So bedevilments are interesting, though. I had never seen that. I was years in the program. I realized that for every bedevilment, there's practically a corresponding promise. Did you know that, Harold?
Yes, I've become aware of that hanging around you and going to the same meetings that you go to. Some wonderful things have come out. I've been around these rooms over 24 years, and every month there's something new that comes up, and I really enjoy learning. I believe in lifelong learning. I'm dedicated to being teachable, and I really like this, the fact that we can put these things together and make the connections. You know, back in the 1950s, there was a man, wonderful doctor and therapist, who wasn't in recovery. He didn't teach recovery, but he taught something that has helped me very much, and it reminds me of the word bedevilment. He calls it the enemy voice. He teaches that Dr. Albert Ellis teaches that we all have a tendency to self-sabotage, and that part of us has a voice. He calls it the enemy voice, and so he teaches what's called enemy voice recognition. And if we can recognize, if we can see the freight train coming down the tracks, we can step off the tracks and preserve ourselves. And so he taught enemy voice recognition, and it's really it's related to this in a way, in that we can, if we understand what the bedevilments are, then we can deal with things more successfully. It's like a football team watching their opponent's videotapes prior to the game so that they can be ready for the offense and the defense that they'll be facing that Friday night. And so we can do the same thing as far as enemy voice recognition, or in the Big Book, page 52, it's called the bedevilments. Joseph?
To be forewarned is to be forearmed. Enemy voice recognition software, huh? Well, this is the software.
There you go.
We were having trouble with personal relationships. That's the bedevilment. Why don't you do the? Do you have the list there with you?
Yes, I've got it right in front of me. I love
this.
All right,
I'll do the bedevilment and you do the promise that goes along.
Okay.
Okay. Now you're gonna remember the bedevilments tell us what it was like before recovery, what our lives were looking like. The promises is telling us after we've done, before we're halfway through, which step 9 is the understanding. I think a lot of the promises that we find in step 9 also occur on step 5, but the Big Book, the promises come at step 9, so we just let it go with that. Let's see, what do we got? Okay, we were having trouble with personal relationships.
And the promise is, it reads, from now we're on page 83 of the Big Book, folks.
Yeah.
We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away.
Well, there's the answer that's right there. It's not about us.
Right. And that's, if I was with my first sponsor, if I was having a rough time, if my self-sabotage was in high gear, if I was, really messing things up for myself, making mistakes, stumbling around. My sponsor would have me do something that gets my thinking off myself and onto someone else. And that is promise number one. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. So we find somebody to help and help them. And sometimes, as Joseph and I teach our sponsees, we need to pick up the phone and just say, hey, I'm checking in, or can I read the third step prayer to you, ask for permission, talk to them. Now, if it's not a good time to talk, they will tell you. Otherwise, have a little conversation. And the fascinating thing about this is that some people have a rough time even after years and years in recovery, and you never know, your call might come to them at just the moment when they're having a rough time, and a call like that will interrupt the negative cycle and make it more positive and can turn the whole situation. In fact, many people have told me that they called and later they found out that at that moment the person was actually thinking about drinking. We call it stinking thinking. And instead of taking that drink, the call came in and it changed all the energy. It was, I can't even count the number of times people have told me that, and it's one of the miracles of this program. So if you can lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows, that's really a key. Joseph?
I've always understood if you want to be interesting, be interested.
Yes.
Ask about other people. You know, sometimes it's tough. I get sponsees, or I'll have somebody that'll need to talk. And, you know, I don't want to hear this. It's a complaint, or they got to get something off their chest. But I know as long as I'm willing to put in the time and listen attentively to the man, that we're building a relationship. And it's not about me. Sometimes they just need to talk. And that's okay. But that comes in time, where you can get out of yourself enough to be considerate enough to listen. That's tough for me. I'd rather talk. I have so many words and so few thoughts. Listening, it takes a lot more energy for me to do that. Okay, the second bedevilment, we couldn't control our emotional natures. Anger can be, I'll say this, anger can be just as heavy as whiskey once you've acquired a taste for it. Harold?
Yes, I've known many people, and my dad, rest his soul, I believe, looking back on all the years and all of his drinking and all of his rage, I believe he was a rageaholic. And yes, indeed, the brain imaging research is wonderful. The biochemistry, world of biochemistry is wonderful, and now we know beyond a doubt that the rage fills us with adrenaline, and the adrenaline can be just as addicting as alcohol or heroin. The promise that goes with number two, we couldn't gain control of our emotional nature. The promise reads, we will comprehend the world, the word serenity, and we will know peace. We will comprehend the word serenity and will know peace. Joseph?
It must be, and we will know peace, I think. I missed a word in there somewhere. Serenity and peace. I like to think of the 23rd Psalm, where it says, leadeth me beside the still waters. Still waters are serene, they're peaceful, and they're reflective. So this is where we get to, we we start controlling our emotional natures. We're starting to see. I had a sponsee one time that was about a week in, chronic relapse, you know him. He's still out there and on and off, you know, but he's okay, you know. Whenever he's ready, I'm here for him. And he felt serene and peaceful. And he looked up and he said, "What a beautiful day. Look at the sun and the tree." It was like he never saw them before for a very long time. And he went back out. He slipped. And you know why, Harold?
No.
He was so not used to being serene and peaceful. He was uncomfortable being at peace. And the only way he could do that was he had to change back to his familiar haunt. I used to say in meetings, I used to live in hell, but I was comfortable there because I knew where all the light switches were.
Yeah.
The bedevilment, yeah. Number three. Go ahead.
Well, the fascinating thing about self-sabotage is that we become so familiar with our pain and comfortable with our misery that anyone that suggests changing that, a lot of people can take offense at that, and they feel like someone's trying to take their very nature. They're so identified with their stress level that to give up any of that stress, they think they're giving up part of themselves. So the beauty of the 12 steps is that it can help people see that they are not their stress, their anger, their pain. They are more than that. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Three, we were prey to misery and depression.
And promise number three reads, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. And that relates to what we were just talking about, the fact that as we begin to see a bigger possibility, we can begin to let go of some of the stress and the pain and the misery. And then if we have someone to come alongside us and walk with us, after having let go of that stress, we can decide not to pick it up again, and we have a whole new attitude and outlook upon life. Joseph?
We couldn't make a living. Well, although in some circumstances, some of the best employees ever met were alcoholic. That paycheck was a guarantee of them getting their drugs and alcohol. So they would come in on time. They would do their job. They were hard to be around, that's for sure. But they would be there because they knew once that paycheck was gone, so was the ability to get the drugs and the alcohol. But eventually, time takes time, it unwinds. So now it depends on just living by your wits. Harold?
Well, in the downward spiral, I've seen people with alcohol and drugs, and alcohol is a drug, by the way, and the losses pile up, and there's loss after loss after loss. And what I've seen so many times is that the job is the last thing to go, for the reason you just explained. That income is the source of their drug, which is alcohol. And so there are a lot of alcoholics who, I go to work every day. I go to work every day. I'm not an alcoholic. Well, that's not the question. But the promise number four is, fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. And I think that occurs when the honesty level goes up and we realize, well, what I love about the 12 steps and the big book is that they emphasize again and again that we don't really work for one company or another, we really work for God. God is our employer. That's a wonderful realization, and I think that's linked with promise number four. fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. Joseph?
To amplify that a little bit, you got to look at it. The fear of economic insecurity will leave us. That doesn't mean you're going to have money. Sometimes it often does. Things happen. I've seen people get rich and get all their money back and then some, be captains of industry, own large firms and businesses, attorneys and doctors who start to blossom, salespeople, all kinds of things, but not always. Sometimes people still struggle. Get the kids a new pair of shoes, all of that. Single moms. But the fear is what goes. That knowing that we have a new employer, God, and our needs will be met. I've heard many times in meetings, people work in an honest 12-step program, their needs were met. My original sponsor, Kenneth, was putting brakes on my 4Runner back in Austin. And he told me, he says, I don't have enough money to buy food tomorrow. And I think this was a learning. I was going to pay him for the – I had somebody challenge that. I thought, no, I was going to pay him. I think it was more of a learning thing he was doing. But it wasn't agreed I was going to pay him. Maybe he thought I was expecting him to do it for free. I don't know. But he made the statement that he didn't have enough money for tomorrow's food. And so I asked him, what are you going to do? He said, when I run into problems like that, I always do the same thing. I said, what is that? He says, I work with another alcoholic and my needs are always met. And my needs are always met when I work with another alcoholic. So he had left the fear of economic insecurity. He knew by doing the next, and I've heard people, this is not a unique statement. I've heard it many, many times in the years I've been going to the program. Girls and boys where they didn't really have, the numbers didn't add up, but they had enough money to pay the rent, for the car payment. They had enough money for food, and they really never knew how it all came together. All they knew is it did. That was God being their new employer. Harold?
Yes, that's what I remind myself often, is the person that thinks they're my employer really isn't. It's all about God. And my ability to turn my life and my will over to God, over to the care of God. Some people don't understand that. People in the program do, and people at my church do. So in those circles, I can say my real employer is God, and that's how I live my life. Joseph?
Number 5 on the bedevilments, we had a feeling of uselessness. Hey, useless. We felt like there's nothing we could do. We weren't good for anything. Good for nothing, I believe the term would be. Harold?
Yes, I used to be one of Santa's helpers, and I would go to the elementary school around Christmas time and talk to the kids and remind them to be good, and I would always grab the principal and have him come up and say, Mr. Smith, I've known Mr. Smith for many, many years, and when he was a little boy, a lot of the kids would be good so they could have candy, or be good so that they could have cake, or be good so that they could have cookies. But when Mr. Smith was a little boy, he was good for nothing. And after a pause, the kids would laugh, and Mr. Smith would laugh. So, but this is different. We had a feeling of uselessness, and promise number 5 says that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Now, the self-pity part is very, very familiar to me. I would have, on a regular basis, I would have pity parties, balloons, ice cream, everything. I would sit on the pity pot and say, pour me, pour me, pour me a drink. Well, self-pity was one of the character defects that was high on my list. And again, getting our thoughts onto other people is a secret to defeating self-pity. Self-pity is so destructive, and I need help in spotting it, so I've asked my friends, and especially my spouse, to point it out if they see me dipping down into self-pity. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. We were full of fear. Fear, the number one killer. You know, in my life, I've had many, many horrible things that I had to deal with, some of which actually happened. Most of the fears we have never really mature. It's about living in the future. The future is always fraught with fear. It's an undiscovered country, as the past is always fraught with regret. Things could always have been better. It's a way of distracting us from the present. The alcoholic is a way of always trying to live in some fantasy position. Fear is part of that fantasy. I don't have to deal with anything in the moment, only the fear of something that might happen. It's you can't be at peace, you can't be at ease, you can't be at comfort when you're in fear. And fear, it could be, in practice enough, could be just as heady as alcohol once you've acquired a taste for it. I know some people live in fear constantly. To live in fear, now you know what it means to be a slave. To always have that fear over your head, the dark cloud. Little Abner had a character called Joe Skivix. He always had no vowels in his name, and he had a black cloud, and the lightning bolt was always going off. There's always something bad happened to Joe. Actually, he wasn't that fearful about it. He just knew that. Reminds me of Sisyphus. If some of you know who Sisyphus is, one of the titans that were banished to the earth, and his job was he had to roll this giant boulder up a hill every day, and at night it would roll back down, and every day he'd have to roll it back up, and the gods would come and visit him. And to their consternation, Sisyphus would always turn around and smile, and it used to really make the Olympians angry. And Sisyphus was content because he knew what he was going to do each and every day. Harold?
My. Well, promise number 6 is we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. I love that one. And it's so true. It's so true. If I will remember to pray and ask God for his will, amazing things happen. I remember one particular day I was at Portland State, and it was getting close to my graduation time. I needed to handle some loose ends and talk to some people and get some things all taken care of so that I could graduate on schedule, and because I had a job waiting for me as a family therapist. And so
hold on for a second. I wanted to sign off. We're going to continue on, but we need to sign off at WNAH for our hour. To all the folks in Nashville, Arkansas, and Kentucky, thank you for listening. You can catch us on the internet feed at WNAH, and we'll see you next week on the radio. Go ahead, Harold. Keep going.
All right. Goodbye, everybody in Nashville and Arkansas. All right.
And
so,
Kentucky. Don't forget Kentucky.
And Kentucky, yes. And even Mississippi, right? No.
No. We don't go to foreign countries right now.
So the So promise number six reads, we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. So I'm at Portland State University. It's a three-floor, the building I was in had three floors at the time, and you could take the elevator or take the stairs, nice wide stairs, and I was working on fitness at the time also, but I was looking for a person so that I could get all my requirements met for graduation, and I had been looking for several days. Now, I will admit that I had forgotten to pray about this until the day in mention, and then, so I'm on the third floor, I'm looking for this person, and I just took a moment and silently said a prayer, said, God, would you help me find this person? And then I had pressed the button to go down the elevator when my still small voice said, don't take the elevator, take the stairs. And I will usually argue with the voice for God, but I decided to go ahead and comply. All right. I went down the stairs, and when I reached the bottom step, there was the person right in front of me. Right in front of me. And that sort of experience I call a God shot, or I call a faith builder. And so now I measure my days on whether my faith was built or diminished. Each experience, was my faith built by this experience? And indeed, when I remember to pray, there is a payoff for that. And but I think that sort of payoff is reserved for those who will, on a daily basis, really get into the study of the truth, the Word of God. I think we have to study that on a daily basis to really be in the family of God and to be dedicated to the truth. We can be good people, but if we don't know how God thinks, I don't think it's going to work as well. So we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us, and that's if we're increasing our conscious contact with God every day by working the 12 steps. Joseph?
I now handle things that used to baffle. Now I baffle things that used to handle me.
Yes. All right.
We instinctively know, sometimes intuitively know, to step away. Things that we would have just jumped into and gotten in the fray. For me, it's always like, and I'm Italian, and I have my fuse is not as long as I would like it to be. But the 12 steps has taught me sometimes I need to back off. But like my sponsor Harold used to say, sometimes you just need to. What was it, Harold?
Oh my, which one?
back down.
You need to back down. Swallow our pride, be humble, and think. The one that gets me is when my sponsor told me, because one of the things is, as I get closer and closer to God, I begin to understand that God wants me to. Well, as the step 12 reads, having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. We've got an assignment to carry this message, to tell people about this. And Jesus said the same thing, tell people about me. We've got an assignment. And so what my sponsor used to say is that the people to whom we're supposed to go and tell, that's called our mission field. And that's one word for it. Those are the people that we need to talk to at some point in time, directed by God and Holy Spirit, We need to talk to those people. So if I'm in traffic and a car, there's some kind of a situation, and I'm tempted to yell at somebody or make an obscene gesture or honk my horn or do something rude, you know, cut them off or put on my brakes or, you know, inevitably there's some situation where later I may have to speak to that person and speak to them about something really important like recovery or like God. And if I've been unreasonable, unfriendly, unkind, unforgiving, if I've been a road rage, that really ruins a future opportunity to talk to somebody about something important. I mean, how important is it to have a spot in traffic or have a parking place? I mean, compared with the life and death struggle of recovery or even eternity in heaven, these are the things that are important. So one of the encouragements to back off from an argument is that person is your mission field. Joseph?
We were unhappy. Oh, we were not happy. Not a happy camper. We were unhappy. I think happiness is a little overrated. I think it's a reaction to the immediate environment. We're happy because I got a job. We're happy because I got a house. I'm happy because, and all those things could be taken away. But it makes a big difference. We learn joy in the program through acceptance. That's the new happiness, is acceptance. We accept our lot, no matter what how far down we go. We accept the fact where we went and what we can do with it. So I like to think of it, we can fill the measure of your creation and find joy therein. Harold?
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. There's a big difference between happiness, which is superficial, and joy, which really goes deep. And I think joy is the natural product of us increasing our conscious contact with God, becoming more and more useful to God every day, eliminating those things, asking God to remove our defects of character. That brings joy, and joy is so much more important. But promise number 7 reads, we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And I think we could add the word joy to that, and it would be right in the ballpark. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness and joy. And that really is my experience with these steps, that the freedom, the new freedom they're talking about, is the freedom of, instead of telling a lie as the first thing out of my mouth, just when I admitted the truth, I knew a new freedom. As you said earlier, Joseph, lying becomes a slavery. And the freedom of just telling the truth and being honest is fantastic. Somebody famous said, you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. And we couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. We couldn't seem to relate to other people. We couldn't really help them because we were too busy helping ourselves down. But to other people, no. We were too busy. Couldn't really be of really help. We would say we would help and not show up. We would talk a good game, but there was no follow through. The promise is what, Harold?
Promise number 8 is, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And that that that's really packed with a lot of meaning for me. There are a lot of people who wish to shut the door on the past, and that's what drinking is about. They want to forget. That was my case. I wanted to shut the door on the past. I had a lot of trauma in my childhood from ages 8 to 11. Wanted to shut the door on that. Well, that's not really the point. We will see how our experience can benefit others, and that is freedom that I began to recognize, is that what I had gone through and what I had managed to heal from became a deep well of wisdom that I could dip into, and it became helpful for other people. When it's the real deal, a lot of people that I've worked with in the world of recovery, they've told me that it's really valuable to them that I've been where they've been, and I can relate to what they're saying, and that's what this is really all about. We can be more useful to God and more helpful to our fellows if we're willing to learn from what happened to us and then bring that learning to bear in an honest way. Joseph?
The stupid will neither forgive nor forget. The naive will forgive and forget. And the wise man will forgive but not forget. You got to remember, nobody ever forgets where they buried the hatchet. The bigger the sinner, the greater the saint. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, matter of fact, the further down the scale we have gone, the more we can be of help. So when you turn that around, it makes all the difference. Because you're going to be able to handle people and relate to a person that otherwise would have been lost. You're able to open the door to the land of the lost. And 12, and most of all, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. Harold?
That, again, the story where I was searching for the person, I remembered to pray. God said, use the stairs. I got to the bottom step. There was the person. Now, that's something that is not humanly possible, but I had one little moment where I realized suddenly that God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And it goes on and gets bigger and bigger, and it's a wonderful life, really giving God the credit, giving God the glory. In those situations, I've got to watch out for my personal pride, because there's a part of me that would like to take credit for that. Oh, I was smart, you know, I took the stairs, but We don't want to enter into a competition with the creator of the universe. So, most of all, we suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And I value the word us in that one also, because this is a group thing, it's a we thing. I am not isolated. I'm in big trouble if I isolate myself. I need to go to meetings, share with other people. I only get to keep what I give away, and that's what this program is about. That's what rumradio.org is about also. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Well, I think that we will close that up for tonight. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you got something out of it. I know I did. Thank you for your time and your effort on our behalf.
Yes, you're welcome.
Oh, okay. And I want you to remember that we're in a hunt. What it was that we're in 142 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,470 towns, cities, and villages. And we just went over 100. We're approaching 161,000 hits to the website. So I know this is doing good out there. Somebody I know personally that this is doing some good. We try to stay anonymous to the 11 tradition, and no money is being made for the effort. The credit for this work goes to God and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Fellowship of Recovery. For we all are in the Fellowship of the Spirit. So thanks again, and remember, like usual, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.